Hello and welcome back to another episode of BJ Murphy 360. I am your host, BJ Murphy, and on this episode, I sat down with my good friend Algernon Cash. He is a sought-after political commentator across the state of North Carolina. He has chaired the North Carolina Energy Forum and is the owner of Wharton Gladden, where they're investing in a brand new franchise called Zesto, the Zesto restaurant in the Triad area. Although the name Zesto, the brand, has been around a while, so they're excited about relaunching this business here in North Carolina. We've done this episode at least once before, and we had really great feedback. So what I'd like to say is here's another politically agitating, lighthearted, and fun episode for your educational and listening pleasure. On this episode, we discussed what the North Carolina Leadership Forum is, guns and mental health, President Trump and Stormy Daniels, is the president keeping his campaign promises, free trade, the $1.3 trillion compromise recently. And we even talk about this year's elections in North Carolina, as well as the 2020 NC governor's race. And then we had a lot of fun towards the end where we did a rapid fire round. I made him choose between socks or no socks. If the president and Joe Biden actually got in a fight, who would win? Dollar cryptocurrency, Pepsi or Coke? And we just had an absolute blast. And I think you'll see that and hear that throughout this episode. So enjoy, and this was to your success.
Social media is changing the way we do business, watch TV, and shop. Small businesses and personal brands need to adapt, and fast. BJ Murphy is a B2B sales trainer, social media entrepreneur, and former mayor of 21,000. He's bringing his podcast, BJ Murphy 360, to help you increase sales, gather more leads, and grow professionally. Feel free to share with friends and call in with your thoughts. Here's BJ Murphy, and here's to your success.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm good.
He's sharp, got the glasses on. GQ. Hey, everybody, this is BJ Murphy, BJ Murphy 360 podcast and show. I am with my man AC, Algernon Cash, again. We're at the AC Hotel in downtown Asheville, North Carolina. It's good to be with you again, my friend.
It's good to be with y'all, and I just want to let y'all know this segment is brought to you by Coca-Cola Classic.
paid sponsorship. This is brought to you by H2O, H-O-H. It's good to be with y'all again, and it's great to be with Algernon. We've been together again for the last day and a half with the North Carolina Leadership Forum, and this time we've been discussing a lot of, we went from coal ash tour yesterday to a deep discussion about bringing the community together to talk about energy needs for the future. And today we spent a lot of time talking about policy and a bunch of other things. You want to kind of summarize without giving too much, but
yeah, because I think there's some policy recommendations that'll be coming out here soon surrounding what we've been discussing. But BJ and I have had the honor of being part of the North Carolina Leadership Forum. Now, this is our fourth meeting. Mm-hmm. We've got one more to go. And it's really cool because it's basically a group of 20-plus people from all over the state with opposing views and different backgrounds, people like me from the private sector and BJ from the private sector, as well as people from the public sector and community foundations and nonprofits and so forth. And so you can only imagine how dynamic the conversations get. And I think when this is all said and done, we're trying to present a policy proposal that's built around consensus around all these ideas that we've been talking about for a year. And so I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, and the hope really is that even though you might have some varying degrees of discussion on climate change and the future of energy, there are some areas that we do agree on, and we want to see some of those areas work towards some type of policy implementation in the future. So hopefully
we want to see action. We've been talking for almost a year. We want to see some action.
That is right. So speaking of action, just like last time, we're just going to kind of run through the gamut of some really cool stuff. I'm going to hit you with a lightning round here a little bit. And then at the end, I'm going to let you ask a question of the day to the people so they can respond to us on Instagram and Facebook, et cetera. So let's talk about something a little bit deep real quick.
Okay.
Because what happened in Florida about a month ago with the school shooting, it brought out a lot of conversation about guns and mental health and where we are with the Second Amendment. I just want to get a little bit of your take as a citizen and someone who follows politics, especially national politics, what your take was on the conversation coming out of that?
Yeah, well, unlike Justin Stevens, I don't believe we should do away with the Second Amendment. So right. I haven't gotten to that point yet. But I do believe we need sensible, fair gun regulation and gun control in this country. And you know, I'm never, and BJ, you know this about me, I'm never shy about admitting the fact I'm a Republican. But I do believe this is probably where I break with a large majority of the party. And I think the reason why is a lot of times, however you feel about regulations has a lot to do with your perspective. And I think it has a lot to do with maybe your experiences and what you've experienced over right. time. And I think there's a group of people out there, BJ, who have grown up in families where they went hunting every winter and summer and mm-hmm. you know, brought deer back home and had the camaraderie around cleaning it and preparing it and fixing it for the family. And so their perspective around how we should regulate guns and what we should be doing is going to be rooted based on that experience.
Right.
And then you take someone like me, and I say this unapologetically, I grew up in the hood.
Uh-huh.
And so when I think about guns, I think about people getting shot. I think about friends that I've lost
right.
as a result
gang-related
of violence,
uh-huh.
gang-related violence, robberies. I remember the time my grandfather was walking home from the convenience store and somebody ran up behind him and hit him over the head with the back of a pistol, uh-huh. threatened to kill him and robbed him. You know, this is a elderly man that was in his 60s. I remember the time my aunt got broke in on. This was a female,
right.
and this person had a gun. And so for me, my perspective is rooted in a lot of that. And I think for me, I do believe that we need to be a lot more thoughtful and sensitive around how we let people obtain a weapon.
So, you know, I'll give a little bit of opinion here, although that part of this is just creating a dialogue. But one thing that I think needs an overhaul, I even asked a legislator here yesterday who's working in the General Assembly, and I said, I know you're talking about the budget and things. Where are we with the discussion of mental health? You know, because where I live in Kinston, we have a place called Caswell Center. It is a home for the mentally retarded, and I'm sure there's a lot of other acronyms, but it is basically a home for people who grew up that way. This is a way, once they turn 18, that there's a group of professionals there to help them have recreation, which my wife used to do there, or get physical therapy, or have a job, and you try to have as normal a life as you can. But what about the people like, obviously, this Cruz guy, who is obviously somebody who was missed in the system? What do we do to acknowledge that we've got a mental health issue? And more importantly, how do we turn that into policy, not just for the state of North Carolina, but across the country?
Well, and I think that's what, you know, I'm one of those, when we look at the various industries out there that we need to regulate and reform, and we have all these conversations, but I think everything should be done incrementally. And it would seem to me an incremental reform that we could all support and all get behind would be what you just described, you know, mm-hmm. at least going after that segment. Unfortunately, it seems like when the special interest group and the lobbyists and all those get into the room, they almost don't want to give an inch, right? Because mm-hmm. they're afraid, well, if I give an inch on this, then you're going to come back and you want me to adjust something else. And so they get afraid of getting on this slippery slope.
Right.
And I think we got to get away from that. You
know,
but
that's the same problem we got with guns. I mean, there's a difference between someone having access to an assault rifle or military type rifle versus someone who pistol whipped your grandfather.
Exactly.
I mean, because that was a pistol. I own a pistol. I own a rifle. But I'm not going to go around robbing people.
Exactly.
There is this fine line, this balance we've got to do, and it's really difficult for our country because we're rooted in this idea that we all should have a right to defend ourselves.
And we should, but I also think we've got to, you know, when we talk about history and we talk about this, the historic nature of legislation, we need to also go back and revisit the context as well. And you know, when our founding fathers wrote this, one thing that they were really trying to address was the fact that we were living under a tyrannous power and a monarchy.
Right.
And so
and we had the Boston Tea Party.
And we had the Boston Tea Party, mm-hmm. and they felt like it was important that we had weapons and arms to defend ourselves.
Right.
And that environment has shifted. And I'm going to tell you right now, if anybody thinks that they've got enough arms at their house to defend themselves against the United States government, if they so chose to march into your town,
I would encourage you to go look at Waco.
We got a lot of military.
I think now we got, 5,000 nuclear weapons and tanks and submarines and, just things that I think our founding fathers could not have even begun to predict.
Right.
But then the flip side of that is where we get in this conversation about assault rifles, that is where I feel like we need tougher regulations. I don't believe everybody should be walking around out here with an AR-15. I also don't believe that when people say, well, I need an AR-15 to hunt. Well, I say to you, if you need an AR-15 to hunt, you don't know how to hunt.
Well, I've never met somebody. I've shot an AR-15. I've got a friend who I know's got one, but I've never seen him or heard him talk about using it to hunt. I will tell you that I was in the Dominican Republic on a vacation, the same island as Haiti, and it was interesting because we were going to go zip lining, and there's a teenager at the gas station on our way to go zip lining, and we were in a van, and he was dressed in all black, and he had an assault rifle. And that's where I see people walking around with assault rifles. You don't walk down any street, even in Asheville or Kinston or Winston, with people doing that. But there are abuses to it, and could there be reform? Yes. But just like what we've been discussing last day and a half, for somebody who you're not as far as getting rid of the Second Amendment, you see there needs to be some type of logical control. There's some people who won't not outright ban it. Some people want to go hunting with it, whatever they want to do. Where are the common set of solutions? Where can we agree? And then can we put that into policy? And that's the overarching question. I think we always get lost in politics.
We do, but I think the point you brought up was a good one. Just I think a point that most people can seem to agree on is that if you are mentally challenged, you probably don't need to possess a firearm. Mm-hmm. I think that's a common sense reform that we could put in place. But I think the reason, and this is where I get frustrated, the reason a lot of common sense reforms don't get in place, whether it's about guns, or it's about healthcare, or it's about energy, mm-hmm. or transportation, or whatever your favorite topic is I feel like we now are in this country where the special interest groups have so much control and so much money and so much power that the little guys, the voters out here, you know, their voice isn't always quite heard as loudly.
That's interesting. So let's stay on a national topic, but let's do something, because last time we got a great conversation about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Got some good feedback from you. So I really appreciate everybody who likes and shares this video and even makes comments, because it makes me better, it makes Algernon better, and it drives a conversation that's really fun to have. So one thing that I think has been an absolute distraction, and I think it has absolutely no true bearing on this presidency, but it is getting headlines for some unknown reason. And you've talked about it a little bit on your lot. If you follow Algernon on Facebook, it's locked in with Algernon Cash. And that is the whole Stormy Daniels thing. I just see the whole thing as a distraction that doesn't carry much water. And I'm just kind of curious where you are on that.
Well, it is all a distraction. I mean, whether it's Kate McDougal or Stormy Daniels or mm-hmm. the contestant from The Apprentice, who I'm drawing a blank of her name, and whoever else is waiting out there right now to file a lawsuit against the president.
Because they want
to
write a book or get paid. That's what it is.
You know, it is a distraction, but it's also, for me, a deep concern.
Why? I mean, we were concerned about Bill, but that happened in the White House. This happened before this guy was ever really in politics.
I recognize that, and I know that's the argument. It's concerning to me for two reasons.
All right, let's hear it.
One, as a Republican, I am very concerned about the hypocrisy that has some kind of way crept up into our party in the last year or so, and that's very concerning, because uh-huh. I feel like I chose to be a member of the Republican Party because we tend to be the party that truly stands on its values. We're convicted by our values. We're convicted by what we believe. We're convicted by what we believe in this country to be pure and so forth. And so that's one thing. We demonized Bill Clinton about this 20 years ago. I don't care what anyone says. I stand on this right now. Donald Trump right now is being accused of having sexual relations with these three women outside of his marriage. No one's saying he did it in the White House,
right,
but outside of his marriage. If Barack Obama was being accused of if there was just Stormy Daniels, just one,
right,
I am telling you right now, Mitch McConnell
and Paul Ryan would call on the president to resign just to protect the sanctity of the office.
And you're right, but here's the reason why I think you're right and why I think it's different than what we've seen in the past, and that is we knew that this was a character flaw of this man, and we still elected him. Because there was that tape that was 10, 15 years ago, he was getting on this bus, and he was being recorded, and he didn't know it was being recorded, and he said some pretty foul things. We knew this is the man he was, so we're almost like the bar's not nearly as high as President Obama, who we know has had a very successful marriage, two beautiful kids. He's raised them right. His personal moral standards were higher.
What does that say about our party?
I get that.
What does that say about our party to elect a man who actually believes it's okay to speak and act the
But
way
we
he
had
is.
The alternatives. We had the Rubios and the Cruises.
But even more so, what are we saying to women? What are we saying to independent women who we need to draw in and attract into this party so that we can continue to be viable and sustainable long term? What are we saying to your daughter?
No,
What are we saying to my daughter?
Right.
Should my daughter be a Republican at what she... You know, my daughter is 14 years old. She'll be voting in the next 4 years. She's listening to this stuff right now on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Is she someone that I'm going to be able to attract into the party after going through some of this? But then I want to hit the second point, and it's all yours. So someone said to me the other day, the sex life of the president should not matter. I firmly agree. Firmly agree. Donald Trump's sex life does not matter to me. I could care less if he is tying up Melania every single night to the bed, mm-hmm. as long as it's Melania.
Mm-hmm.
Because my problem is, if the president will do that to his wife and his newborn child while they're not looking, what will the president do when you and I are not looking?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the dangerous part to me.
Right.
It's loyalty. That's what's in question.
No, I get it. And so as a voter, that was a big issue for you. And my point to you earlier is that there were plenty of other candidates to choose from. And I remember you going a year before he was even the nominee going, the Trump train is real.
You
knew it was real because he spoke to the core of a lot of the things that the grassroots Republicans wanted. He was just a very, he was just a different candidate. And I made a point to a friend the other day, and I said that for all of Hillary's flaws, we knew them. And we didn't like them. We know a lot of Donald Trump's flaws. The difference between the two candidates, though, was that Hillary had been in office, so we knew what she was like serving in office. We weren't really sure what Donald Trump would be serving in office. He had never had that opportunity. So I think most people were willing to go with his unknown of serving in that office versus the known of what she had already done in office.
Well, I hear all that, and I want to make one final point before we move on to another.
Yeah, because I got a couple things.
I definitely want to get this in too. The other concerning thing about it, and I said two, but I should have said three. The other concerning thing about it is this $130,000 payment to Stormy
mm-hmm.
Daniels,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like we need to look hard at that. We need to research it.
Though it was before he became president.
But no. When they made the $130,000 payment, that was in October of 2016 during the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that's a real issue.
Gotcha.
That could potentially be a FEC violation, Federal Election Commission violation. And again, this goes back to the hypocrisy of the party right now, which is concerning me.
Right.
When John Edwards was called to the mat because maybe he made he made a payment to a female that he'd had a sexual relationship with, and she'd had a child, and mm-hmm. he gave her some money, and you know during the campaign, and he got in a whole lot of trouble for that.
Right.
And Republicans were the loudest ones out there beating
right.
the drum on it.
Right.
And so I do think it's concerning. I think we need to continue to investigate it. We need to figure out, was that payment right? And I'm just calling on the Republican leaders to not be silent. That's all.
So you saw it here first on BJ Murphy 360, Algernon Cash, the moral authority of the Republican Party, helping to steer us back to the right spot. Love the chatter about it. Let's stay with some national politics. And let's talk about Trump again. Being the uncanny candidate he was and the uncanny president he has become, is he keeping his campaign promises, though?
Yes and no. For a large part, yes. I mean, there are several things that I think Trump has done on immigration, energy, his tax cuts,
you know, even some of the foreign policy decisions that he's made, where I do think, you know, what he promised on the campaign trail is exactly what he's going about doing. Now, you can question whether or not the decisions are good or what the long-term implications will be for America and all these other questions, but the reality is he told you he was going to do these things,
right?
And it's exactly what he's been doing since he got in office. And then I feel like, and the no part of that is I feel like there was some really big policy proposals made on the campaign trail that I'm starting to get concerned may not actually happen, like infrastructure spending. I do like the tax plan. I like parts of the tax plan. There's a lot of parts of the tax plan I don't like. This new spending bill that he just signed.
I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, I think that runs counter to everything he was telling people on the campaign trail. But you know, I don't fault him for that, because I think every president, going back to George Washington, has made promises on the campaign trail only to realize once you're elected it's a lot harder than just campaigning.
And things change, other people in office, and there's a lot of parameters to go in there. I get that. And so let's talk about the $1.3 trillion. I think what was most concerning to me, and I didn't see if it was all of it was debt or not, but I continue to have a hard problem, at least with my own party, who tend to be the fiscal conservatives, which was part of the reason. I'm both a social and a fiscal conservative, although I tend that what I think I tend to govern kind of moderate right, although I have a very far right leaning tendencies politically. But when it comes to governing, it's a little bit different, because I've got to consider all the other people. The $1.3 trillion, though, it's almost all debt. And I'm going, how do we as a country just kind of wake up one morning and go, we got to stop having our normal operations, you know, pew-pew, the bullets from a rifle in some other country by our own military is being financed by debt, thank you, China. And I just, how do we ever get out of that cycle?
Well, we got to make some really tough decisions. I mean, we've got to really implement a fiscal austerity program that truly starts to cut at the budget. And the reality is, anyone trying to have this conversation right now without bringing up entitlement spending, without bringing up the interest on the federal debt, which, again, if you take entitlement spending and just interest on the federal debt, that's somewhere around 70% of the budget. If you lump in defense on top of that, that gets you to about 85% of the budget. So keep in mind, only about 10 or 15 cents out of every dollar is really going to the plethora of federal agencies out there. You know, you name it, Department of Justice, Commerce Department, whatever, Energy Department, whatever your favorite department is. And so when Republicans make comments around, well, hey, let's cut the State Department because that's going to put the budget in line, or let's make adjustments at the Energy Department because that's going to get the budget in line, I think we have to be pushing back on that,
right?
Because it doesn't work that way. And and so if no one's talking about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the federal debt, then we haven't even really started the conversation.
And I know you're a guy who professes, as part of your personal philosophy on governing, to be a free trade kind of guy.
Yes.
What is your take on the recent conversation about the potential trade wars and the tariffs? I'm really curious for you to share with our listeners and viewers, what is a free trade, and why do you think this is good or bad what President Trump has done?
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, let's keep in mind, excuse me, our party has always been known to value free trade. I mean, that's just something that we've been a champion of for many, many decades. I think when you start imposing tariffs and doing the kind of things that Trump is trying to do, and it's all, you know, it's all under the guise of leveling the playing field. That's what they say. But if you really want a level playing field, you just let all the interests really truly compete, and whoever is best is going to rise to the top. But if you start imposing tariffs and you start playing those kind of trade games, you can easily spark a trade war.
Right.
And for your listeners today, I mean, if they want to learn more about this, history will tell you. Go read what happened when Herbert Hoover implemented the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act back in the late 20s. A lot of people believe it wasn't just the stock market crash of 1929
that led to what we saw with the Great Depression. What really drove the Great Depression, quite frankly, if you do your research, it was the trade war that got sparked. Mm-hmm. And it was us placing tariffs on product coming in our country, and then other countries responding, you know, reactively and saying, okay, well, if you're going to put a tariff on this, we're going to put a tariff on that. And then I think it even gets more dangerous when you pass this new steel tariff, and then you start carving out our favorite countries.
Right. Mexico, you say, well, Canada, Mexico and Canada, England,
England, you got, oh, y'all are good. Uh-huh. Well, China, you pay up. Uh-huh. And so I think that just makes them even more antagonized to say, okay, how do we sort of dig back in? Now, the latest announcement from China in retribution to this is, hey, we're going to put a tariff on pork mm-hmm. and some agriculture products. Guess what state gets hurt when they do that? That's North Carolina.
Especially down east where I live. Exactly. There's a lot of hog farms.
I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm saying either, because I do believe we need to hold our trading partners accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So on something like the trade that we have going between Canada and Mexico, if you feel like something is unfair, I think the pathway the president should take is, let's sit down diplomatically and then let's renegotiate NAFTA. Let's make sure NAFTA is operating correctly. I would argue the way NAFTA is structured today is not the way it should be structured long term.
Uh-huh.
But to just impose tariffs and go in that direction, or even what I heard today, the announcement is now the president wants to go after Amazon.
I saw that.
Mm-hmm. And he wants to go after their tax structure and some kind of way.
Singling out one company.
Some kind of way bring them down to earth. And he said, because my friends told me that they're hurting some of their shopping malls. So to me, when you're governing that way, that's just a slippery slope.
Right. That's good. Let's talk about North Carolina real quick. This election year in 2018 is what's called a blue moon election, where there's not a statewide candidate. So there's not a Tillis or Burr or Cooper or Forrest. There's not a statewide election. Yeah, I mean, there are in terms of the judges, but not one that's going to draw massive crowds.
Yep.
So with that, there's been this talk about this blue wave. The Democrats are going to sweep a lot of offices. The North Carolina Democrat Party has done a good job of making sure that every single race is contested. So here's the question. How much will the national wave, the political wave, affect North Carolina, given that we don't have a true statewide contest on the ballot?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, obviously you've got a lot of House members that are running this year,
mm-hmm.
and I think Democrats smell blood in the water, and I think Democrats are pushing really hard to try to, at least, I don't think they're obviously going to regain the Senate this year, mm-hmm. but I think they're pushing hard to try to regain the House. So I guess in terms of North Carolina, I mean, there's not a ton of competitive races around North Carolina, only because of the way the districts are drawn. Probably the only competitive race you're going to see will be in the 13th with Ted Budd. And I think what'll happen is you're going to see a lot of outside money pour into that race because the Democrats are just bloodthirsty right now. I mean, you've got, you know, out in the 5th, you've got Dede Adams trying to take on Virginia Fox. That's an interesting district because in that district, you actually, the number of independents combined with Democrats actually outnumber the Republicans heavily. In the past, though, the way Virginia's been able to keep that seat is a lot of independents don't show up to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be a year where there's so many people fired up and a lot of independents are fired up. And I'm not predicting anything. I'm not saying any person's going to win or lose. But you take the 5th, for example, do you all of a sudden see a surge of independents showing up to vote? And you see a House district like that potentially flip. Not saying that would happen.
Right.
But if you go back to last year and you look at a lot of local elections that happen all over the state where, you didn't have a statewide candidate per se.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in Greensboro, you know, Mike Barber lost his seat. Tony Wilkins. I mean, you had a lot of incumbents across the state that ended up being affected by what I now call the Trump effect.
Right.
People showing up to vote. Not because they were unhappy with their councilman or even their mayor,
mm-hmm.
but they're just unhappy with what they're seeing nationally, and it's got them so emotionally charged. I'm going out to vote,
right?
You know, and so, you know, this primary that just happened down in Texas, where they're saying, "Hey, more Democrats showed up to vote than they did in 2008, that should be scaring the hell out of Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
If we thought 2008 was it, then we should be scared as hell this year. Or if you go up to Pennsylvania, where in a state that Trump won, you know, you got a Democratic candidate outraising his opponent, you know, like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me the writing is on the wall for some kind of a blue wave this year. Does that impact North Carolina or not? I'm unsure about that.
Yeah, and that's kind of where my head has been, is that I see the blue wave happening, but there's not. If Tillis were on this year's ballot, I say yes. There's going to probably even be a change in the North Carolina General Assembly. But there's not that statewide race that's going to attract. Maybe in the 13th or the 5th, there's going to be outside money coming in. But it's not going in across the entire state. It's not blanketing the state. So it's not going to have as deep an impact across our state.
Meadows out here in the western part of the state is going to be pretty safe. And several other people around the state will be safe. But you know, the larger question, though, BJ, is if the electorate is this frustrated and to some degree fatigued already with Trump, and it's only been, you know, 14 months,
mm-hmm.
what does 2020 look like? And unless we see a dramatic and drastic shift in what's going on in Washington, I would predict that his approval is going to continue to fall. And by the time we get to 2020, it could be... You know, no telling what you may see.
Right. Should be interesting. And handicap real quick with your crystal ball, early 2018, before we even had the Republican primaries and Democratic primaries, what the 2020 governor's race is going to look like?
Oh, wow. Well, of course, we got to figure out exactly who's running.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, there's a lot of prediction that Dan Forrest is going to run. And I think he seems to be posturing in that way that he wants to run.
He's pretty much set.
Yeah. And, a lot of people believe that McCrory is going to come out of retirement and try to take him on. So you're going to have two big Republican heavyweights
mm-hmm.
fighting it out to get into the general election. So I think that'll be interesting. And in my view, I think I love Dan Forrest. I think Dan will do very well with the base. But I think Dan could struggle a little bit in the general just because of the makeup of North Carolina. And obviously Dan, he's taken some really, really strong conservative positions, and he's done that in public throughout his tenure as lieutenant governor. And I think that could come back to bite him a little bit in a general election in 2020.
I see that, and I understand it. I will tell you that from watching Dan from near and far, that he has a great way of articulating his message, and I think that is an incredible strength that he have, that even on these sensitive issues, whether it's climate change or minimum wage or whatever it is, I feel like he could still, with the gun debate, he could still articulate a position and not necessarily push people away, but help them understand why he feels that way.
I agree with that, and I think when Dan is in a situation where people are listening,
mm-hmm.
he does good.
Mm-hmm.
But if 2018 is any prediction as to what 2020 could look like, people are walking around like this now.
Right.
You know, and so if you've got an R behind your name, you know, they don't want to hear.
I get it.
So I think if he has an environment, I agree with you, if he's in an environment where people are willing to be open-minded and listen to be sensitive to what he's saying, I think he does a great way of explaining why he takes the position that he takes. But if no one's listening, he can do all the talking he wants.
So let's jump into a fun section, rapid fire. He has no idea these four or five questions I've got for him. And so I'm going to mention a couple of things. You tell me real quick what it is you think, and kind of give an explanation if you like. So socks or no socks?
No socks.
Why do you say no socks?
Well, you know, I'm from the South, you know, and growing up in the South, you know, you walk around barefooted and no socks on all the time.
Right.
And so it's just something that has stuck with me. Honestly, it took me years to even get to the point where I would start wearing shoes. I used to wear flip-flops all the time, even in the wintertime. Uh-huh. And then I sort of got attracted to these sandals or these loafers. So, yeah, no socks for me.
No
ever.
Socks.
Ever.
Okay, so if there was a fight, would you pick Biden or Trump?
Oh, gosh, that's a good one. I had to go with Biden.
He's out of Pennsylvania, man. He
just looked like he might take it to you. I mean, seriously, he looked like he might take it to you.
Trump
grew up rich. He ain't had to do a lot of fighting.
I see that. Yeah. He is heavier set, a little bit taller. He's probably got longer reach.
A little reach, yeah.
But you'll give the edge to Pennsylvania versus New York City.
Yeah, I got a feeling. When you look at Joe Biden, it looks like he's been in some fights. I mean, it looks like he might take it to you. I
really like Joe Biden.
I like him too.
I actually thought he was going to be a formidable presidential candidate. But all right. So the dollar or cryptocurrency?
The dollar all the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a fan of cryptocurrency at all, and I always think that people need to be really speculative with these kind of things. I'm not saying that. It's like anything else, like the conversation we've had the last 2 days about electric vehicles and renewable energy sources and all that. I'm not saying that eventually we won't mature to a point where we have the introduction of these other kind of currencies. But at present, unless you really know what you're doing, you probably should stay out of that market or you'll hurt yourself.
Right. And at least not invest a lot if you're playing around with it. All right. So you didn't know this was on here, but this was I wrote this earlier today. Rapid fire, Coke or Pepsi?
Oh, man. Now, again, I just want y'all to know this show's been brought to you today by Coca-Cola Classic. all jokes aside, I know why BJ asked me this question, because I've got a restaurant coming out.
I was going to ask you about it.
Zesto Burgers and Ice Cream. We just signed a contract with Pepsi. I'm sorry, Greg. This is all they had at the AC Hotel.
Pepsi was born in North Carolina, Eastern North Carolina, too.
It's Pepsi all the way. But this is all they had at the AC Hotel. So when we're done with this, I'm getting ready to go in here and talk to my general manager. it'll be Pepsi up here next time.
We're going to hook up Pepsi here. Okay, so this is the part where you get to ask whatever you want. There's no real limit to it. A question of the day to everybody who's watching, for them to answer. What is your question of the day?
Yeah, I mean, you know, BJ and I talk a lot offline too, and I mean, you probably can tell from watching us that we're good friends and that kind of thing. But BJ knows I have a lot of concern about sort of where we are as a country right now, not just because of Trump in office. I don't want to single that out, but I think some of the political brinkmanship and just some of the things that are going on in our country right now. I'm just curious, to those that are listening to this show, what are your thoughts about what's happening to the country right now? What are you concerned about the most? And do you think we're going in the right direction? I mean, I think it's remarkable you've got two guys like BJ and I. We are in the same party. We don't agree on everything, as you've just seen from this discussion. White, black, which a lot of times nowadays, this is really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
I would absolutely love, and maybe this is my naivete or whatever, I would love to see our country get to a point where we could see more of this.
Right.
I'd love to turn on MSNBC and Fox News and CNN and whatever your favorite channel is and see more of this.
Right.
Two people that disagree throughout a conversation, mm-hmm. had fun doing it, still laugh, and we'll have a drink after this.
Right.
And, you know, I'd love to see more of this. So my question to you all, what are you most concerned about in terms of what's going on in our country? Or if you're not concerned about anything, what are you most excited about?
Most excited about, most concerned about. I love it. Thank you, Algernon. Appreciate you being on.
Y'all stay locked in.
You stay locked in. And be sure to go to Facebook, lock in with Algernon Cash, locked in with Algernon Cash. We'll have this up on podcasts and YouTube, Facebook, and all that good stuff. And until next time, this was to your success.
Thanks for listening to the BJ Murphy 360 podcast. Be sure to connect on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with @BJMurphy360 and visit him online at magicmilemedia.com. Until the next episode, here's to your success.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.